Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of those posts covering finance and property news, another Monday evening, and of course, Edwin is back for another rant. And boy, Edwin, things are getting more and more stupid.
Show me the money, Martin. Show me the money.
You've got to ask the question, who's pulling the strings, right? I mean, I did this show which basically said, hello, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, honest, which to me sums up some of the stupidity that we've seen recently. Wherever you look, you know, there are taxpayers' money being handed out left, right and centre. People sort of chasing their own tails. It's getting more and more crazy.
That video there, man, you should have started with, hello, it's the government here. I'm here to help you.
With an appropriate noise.
Yeah. Or you could have the music and the, you know, in the funeral procession or something like that.
Well, I mean, I was just amazed, Edwin, the litany of announceables relating to property in the last week. It's hit fever pitch. You know, wherever you look, it's the same old, right? Everyone is talking about the property sector. Everyone's using more taxpayers' money to try and fix a bit here, fix a bit there, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody's really taking the truth seriously, though. And a lot of these announceables will make no difference at all.
Now, they're not going to make any difference. We've been telling our people, our followers, what to expect, what's coming around the corner. Developers are more in the know than what a lot of people would think they are. I mean, they are politically connected anyway, so they know ahead of time. We shared with the people what the governments were going to do, from the state and federal governments were going to do with regards to the announceables, with regards to from that snapshot that you put up there, underwriting housing projects to boost viability. I mean, they're just talks, but this is just the beginning, Martin. This is just the beginning of a myriad or an avalanche of schemes and incentives that the government's going to throw. They have to throw at developers. They have to throw at builders in order to build. We spoke last week how developers and a lot of mid-tier developers and builders, they just don't want to deal with the BS, with the red tape, with the local government. So what they've been doing is they've just basically been flipping homes. So they've been concentrating on things that they can control, they can buy, renovate and sell and flip. And this is why in many areas prices are going up. The value of land and existing dwellings that you would expect at one time the first home buyers to go into, jump into, they're out of reach. They're out of reach. Again, I come back to what I said not too long ago in the show. There won't be a suburb in Sydney under the domain region. The definition of the domain Sydney region won't be in any suburb that first home buyers will be able to buy with less than $1 million. And now we've got more incentives going to be thrown at first home buyers, at those wanting to get in the market. The 35,000 positions are going to be made available very soon for those that want to get in the market. Obviously, they've got to meet special criteria, but they've also reduced or lessened the criteria by also now including. My understanding is they're also including just PR holders to become. You don't have to be an Australian citizen. You don't have to be a permanent Australian citizen in order to qualify. They're opening it up, but so they've lessened the criteria. But the positions of the posts are still the same. So it's really the governments are feeling it. The governments can feel, and they're starting to feel it in the polls. They're starting to feel it in the in the surveys that are coming up with regards to the transition from the labs to the libs. But again, are things really going to change under the libs? Is one of the questions that many need to ask. We need to ask ourselves. And how will they change, and how long will it take the change to happen? Because as we said, even if they put shovel to the ground, a lot of these projects aren't going to be purpose ready to occupy for another 4 to 5 years, even if they put shovel to the ground tomorrow.
Absolutely. It is quite stupid, really, what's going on. I thought this headline actually summed it up quite well. You know, New South Wales budget pulling every lever to tackle housing crisis. I mean, you wouldn't, the whole long list of things that are going on there from the New South Wales government. And again, I come back to my critical point. Money is flowing freely. It's flowing freely towards the developers who, as we said earlier on, were sitting on the sidelines, sitting on their hands, saying, "Well, we're not going to do anything unless we actually get more help from the government." And so, guess what? Handout for the developers. Not only will they get underwriting support to allow them to effectively get support for the lending from the banks, but guess what? The government's going to buy. They're going to buy plan off the plan properties as well. The developers are winners here. What about ordinary people? They're not winners.
No, they're not. And this is the thing, mate. This is the stupidity. This is the whole irony and stupidity of the whole thing, right? So they're going to be buying off the plan apartments from, if you do the mathematics on what they're going to be paying for 400 or so apartments, what's been reported as to what they're going to be buying, they're going to be paying close to $1.3 million for each and every single one of those apartment to house the essential workers. No, I mean, it's a good start, but I can tell you what, Martin, if they gave me the $450 million, I bet you I could double the amount of apartments that they could buy. And this is the thing. Now, out of the $450 million, how much of that is going to be allocated to putting together a committee as to choose, to pick and choose which apartments they're going to buy, and how much of that $450 million is it going to be go by way of special gifts and donations to some developers and builders. We're going to talk about as to how the later on as to how the Silent Tigers are coming into the market in certain pockets, which is a little bit scary in one aspect of it. But I can tell you what, when our viewers listen to that. And as to what developers are doing to offload apartments and how things have been put together to for people to buy apartments, it's scary in one sense. But if you adopt that, if the government adopted the same methodology, you can buy in bulk and you can buy a lot cheaper and you can buy established dwellings that are already built. So we don't have to wait another 4 to 5 years for these off-the-plan apartments to come to fruition and get and come to be occupied. I've got from direct connections. I can tell you now. I've got one, two, three buildings in Parramatta where any one of those buildings have got anywhere from 20 to 80 apartments. That I could put together and I could get a great deal for the government if they if they knocked on my door, I could go and broker the deal and I can buy them a hell of a lot cheaper than what they're going to be paying developers and builders off the plan. But that's not the purpose, right? That is not the real reason, right? It's not about buying cheap. It's not about buying right. It's not about buying at a wholesale value. It's how many palms you can grease along the way.
Yes, those brown paper bags, they are absolutely everywhere. I must say, I thought this headline was pretty funny. The New South Wales version of Bank of Mum and Dad to help build more homes, right? So the Labor government will look to buy houses off the plan to give lenders, developers, and builders the confidence to fund and start construction. Again, you got to say, who are the winners and who are the losers? Well, guess what? It's going to be the construction industry that are going to be the winners again, and ordinary people the losers in all of this. This is taxpayers' money we're talking about here. This is money that's going to flow back into the construction sector. It's also worth noting, Edwin, that we saw this, but there was this interesting observation that the building inflation costs are look to surge again, with costs escalating as much as 10% in sectors such as roads and ports post-pandemic. But they're talking about now another hike. So the fact of the matter is that we know that the costs of construction are continuing to accelerate much faster. And that what that means is if you actually go and build new stuff, you're going to be paying a lot more for it. So once again, the economics don't work, but you got to understand it's about bailing out your mates. It's about supporting the construction sector because the construction sector, with their weight of power and their weight of influence, means that you know, governments are going to actually bend over backwards and hand them more money.
Well, that's right. And it's again, we go back to that whole thing, Martin, of, a lot of people blame the Libs and a lot of also people blame the Labs, but they're all part of the same, they're all part of the same real estate group. And, you know, whether it's ScoMo and Partners Real Estate or Albo and Co Real Estate Group, they operate under different names, but it's the same real estate organization as far as I'm concerned. So it's really buying off mates. And look, I stopped being affiliated with either party many years ago because there was just no in my from what I saw, what I know, what I believe, what I perceive from being involved in, you know, on both sides, it's all the same shit. And it's really not looking after the Aussie battle. It's really looking after themselves. This whole thing that people believe that again that the Libs have more affiliation with builders and developers. That's farcical. That's nonsensical. That is really far from the truth. Both parties are affiliated. They're just affiliated with the different groups that would donate to them. But at the end of the day, the groups that donate to both parties, the developers and builders, are of different persuasions, but it's the same. You know, they come under the same umbrella. So this is why I say, like, you know, you're paying premium. There are a lot of properties that are built that are close to new. Do they have to be bought off the plane, as you say, Martin, where you're going to be paying a lot more because of inflation, because of the cost of construction has shot up on the roof? Or wouldn't you be better off buying from the local real estate agents that are selling properties that are 2 or 3 years old? Why does it have to be new? Why does that have to? Does the government get some sort of a tax benefit? Does the government get some sort of a? Do they also negatively gear the new apartments? Is that what happens? Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Why do something constructive if you're going to start throwing money like this? Why not buy the established? Is my question.
I think it's a good question, Edwin. And interestingly, of course, we discussed the other week that what we're seeing at the moment is some of the cheaper property being hoovered up by investors. And that's the same property, of course, which is also potentially for first-time buyers. So that's still putting a lot of price pressure at the bottom end of the market, but further up, not so much. But no, the strategy that you see, particularly from some of the state, and I think federal as well, is to be doing things or to be seen to be doing things, but not necessarily sensible things, not necessarily the best optimized things. But it's actually, as we keep saying, it's all about the announceables. It's all about just showing that they're doing something so that they can get more cycles in the news media. And of course, the announcements pre the budget were over the weekend when it was the media was a bit quieter. So MIM's got quite a good run, as you'd expect. But you got to understand it's a game here. It's a game about trying to actually look as though you're doing things. And by the way, just the context of this, of course, also is that the Reserve Bank now is not expected to cut rates this next week, tomorrow when they actually announce. But more importantly, not this year. So basically, it looks as though it's going to be now next year before we see any rate cuts. And of course, that could be significantly pressurizing households and, of course, the construction sector as well because of the costs of the cost of debt. And then just to add insult to injury, the latest job ads was also declining. So the economy is slowing. The pressure on businesses continues to go in the wrong direction. I just don't think that some of the politicians really are interested in solving the real problems. They're interested in getting the headlines and getting re-elected.
And this is, I thought I read a report over the weekend that, they might call an early election as well. So I don't know whether it was just me wishful thinking or whether it was a real article.
It's been done in the UK. So inflation ticked back down to 2.3%, you know, and so the Prime Minister in the UK said, oh, inflation's back to, quote, normal, and so he called an election. He's not doing very well. But interestingly, there was a Sky News reporter that showed that, in fact, in the UK, if you look at it from 2021, prices are now more than 20% higher. So whilst the inflation might be a little bit easing back, you know, the impost on real households are dramatic, and you know, people are seeing through this, I think, Edwin. I think people are actually waking up to the fact that what politicians say is all about doing the best for the politicians, not best for the country. And talking about what's best for the country, what about this one? You know, we had a big Chinese contingent arrive. What's going on here? And what are the WeChat chatterers talking about with regard to the visit?
Well, this is very, very interesting, Martin, because obviously, Premier Lee's visited Adelaide and is in Canberra today or something. But it's certainly brought a lot of discussion amongst the WeChat chatterers, and this is very, very interesting. And we're going to get because I value more what the WeChat chatterers are saying than what we hear or listen on the mainstream media. But it's rather interesting. Obviously, the reports are that the Premier Lee said basically to re-establish those trade relationships with Australia. To bridge a lot of that that division that's been created over the last few years. But the interesting thing, that's what the mainstream media are saying. But what the WeChat chatterers are saying is really a lot more interesting. And we take a step back, and what they in the commentary on WeChat across many of the investor groups, they're saying, well, that China has already established travel relationships with New Zealand. So basically, for our followers and our viewers, New Zealanders don't need a visa to visit China. So, which is now, we also got to understand that that New Zealand is part of the Five Eye. So what they're saying is look, it's only a given that in the near future, in the not too distant future, we are going to be, Australia's going to be given the same privilege of being able to travel to China. Australian citizens are going to be given the same privilege of being able to travel to China without a visa, by invitation. So this is interesting. Now, what does that do? What does that mean? It basically means, in a nutshell, it means that they really want to persuade a lot of the Chinese Aussies to go to China, as well as the Westerners, to go to China and reestablish or reaffirm lost trade routes in terms of investing us importing goods. Obviously, what Australia's looking for is the uptick of iron ore, the uptick of wine, the uptick of shellfish and the like. And look, in a nutshell, and in simplified version, it's really what they're looking for. This is what the WeChat chatterers are saying. What they're looking at is money in, money out. So as we get invited over to China to the small business operators start reestablishing those import export routes, then money travels from Australia to China, and then from China, it'll flow back into Australia, and it's with through those links of those commercial links and commercial trade links that small business operators established is where you get the flow of money coming back into Australia. So I won't go into too much detail, but see if you've this is how money can come out of China is through established commercial trade links between a company here in Sydney per se and a company in China. We send them goods. Obviously, then the government allows that company in China to pay for those goods. In essence, they buy, for example, this is just my take on it, my summation of it. China sends an order to a company here in Australia, and for a container full of $50 bottles of wine to be shipped out to Chinese business that's going to resell them. But what they do is they only fill the bottles with $2 worth of wine and just relabel the bottles to say whatever, and then that money is then deemed to be allowed to leave China. And that's what they've done in the past, and that is what the WeChat chatters are saying is going to be reestablished again. And this is how you get money out of China. So this is why the WeChat chatters are saying, in the background, they can only see very high value property going up in value a lot more. There'll be a lot more money will be flowing back in from China to this is from mainland China, right? This is where the wealthy, and this is how I think they do it. They get the money over. So then you're going to get a continual growth in price rises. This is why Aussie homes have topped the world for Asian investors and buyers, and this is so things aren't going to get any things aren't going to property isn't going to get any cheaper in Sydney and in parts of Queensland. Things are going to be a little bit slow to move upward other than very affluent parts of Melbourne. But I can tell you what, Martin, Sydneysiders are in for a long, long, bumpy ride when this inflow comes in. And this is why, again, this is what motivates the WeChat chatterers to go out there and continue to buy into residential property because they don't see a downturn, regardless of what interest rates do, regardless of unemployment reports, projections from ANZ or whatever banking institution. They're saying, look, it's all systems go, and property prices in many parts of Sydney will continue to go north. So that's what they're saying that Premier League is really here for, is to really get a franchise group from Alba and Co Real Estate and Partners. I think he's buying the Lower North Shore franchise off Dusty.
Well, yeah, and demand is still very strong, as you say, coming from China. I think it's also worth underscoring, though, the Silent Tigers are also another part of the puzzle. We've been discussing this quite recently, but you've got some further intelligence on this as well.
This is interesting, Martin. I was invited over the weekend to go and to become a part of I went in there as a spy. Was invited by a fellow that was invited by another one of his colleagues to get involved with a simple, I'll call it a syndicate buying group or a buying group, call it what you will, to look at apartments in Parramatta, in a high-rise development in Parramatta. The interesting thing is that the majority of the buyers of the purchasers in these groups are our Silent Tigers. Now, for me, it's deja vu because this is the sort of shit that we saw back in the early 2000s when the market went south at a rate of knots. And back then, before there was a High Court ruling that rebates weren't legal, I think a case in Victoria, I can't remember the case name, but the ruling happened in 2005, 2006, thereabouts. And basically from then, it's really, you're really treading on thin ice when it comes to rebates. And what a rebate is, in essence, is you make an excuse, so you make the premise that you're going to get a discount on settlement from the developer, that he's going to forego 10, or in this case, if they got 20 to 25 buyers in this complex of these units in this complex, that could potentially get up to 15% discount. And let's say on average, a two-bedroom apartment in this complex is worth $1 million. That would get $250,000 off on settlement. And what happens under a rebate contract is the solicitor, the mortgage broker, the vendor solicitor, and the buyer solicitor, they all basically have to be, in my opinion, have to be in cahoots in order for this to work and to get it through unscathed and not to that red flag. The only one that's not a party to what's going on is the bank, or other banks that they're getting the loans from. The individual buyers are getting the loans from, because what they see is they basically see a deposit, a stat deck saying that a deposit has been handed over, but there's really no deposit. All it is is a discount. So, in simple terms, if a developer is giving you a discount because you've put together a syndicate, and you're down to purchasing a $1 million unit for $750,000 because of the discount, well, theoretically, you still got to stump up with the $75,000 of deposit, and that's got to be put into a trust account, whether it be a solicitor's trust account or a real estate agency's trust account, in terms of physical currency, right? In terms of a for lack of better words. So, but there isn't. The deposit is not there. All it is a stat deck, and obviously, it flies in the face of the current laws and regulations. It's what would Lindsay David would call a liar loan, because you've not disclosed the true position of the buyer to the bank. There is no real deposit. It's just a discount. But in order to satisfy, the developer will also pay for the stamp duty. So in a way, the government will say, well, we got our slice of the pie. We don't really care what goes on thereafter. But this is scary, Martin. It is scary, but because you see the amount of people, and in this meeting, I actually saw people that had also flown up from Melbourne to buy in this complex under this rebate agreement with the developer. Now, the developer must have a lot of equity in the project in order to be able to do this. From my understanding, is the developer holds a lot of equity in the project. It's not it's not going to fold. The developer isn't going to fold per se. But the other interesting thing with this is that the everything the agent, the selling agent, says, and the broker were saying, I could refute just about every sentence they made. In the conversation in the meeting, we got told that there were 10 basements to this building. You'd be lucky to dig past three basements and have proper ventilation, let alone 10 basements, along Parramatta River. We also got told that the strata levies are kept very, very low because the buildings well looked after. And under my breath, I just said, bullshit, because once a developer offloads the apartments to these poor bastards that are buying them under this scam, they're I can assure you that the strata levies will go from $1,600 that were quoted to no less than $4,500, if not more. Because the complex has a full-time concierge there, and among other things. So this is scary. So for me, Martin, it's deja vu. Yes, I participated in rebate contracts that were a little bit more simple back in the day, in the early 2000s. We let lawyers deal with that. But after that, after the ruling of 205, 206, it was very, very difficult. It still is very, very difficult. So, look, you're not only skating on very thin ice, but I dare say your blade's gone straight through the ice. And lawyers that would participate in this, I would dare say that if things leaked, they would lose their practicing certificates.
Well, once again, though, it's another example of below the waterline, money changing hands, people not being, aware of how the money flows work, and therefore the market is nowhere near as fair as it may appear. It's not the only example, Edwin, but I think this is a very important one. I've seen a few others over the years where money has changed hands below the table, as it were. Agents have actually been influenced into doing and saying particular things, and taking people into particular properties at particular price points. And again, the fair trading and the regulatory frameworks that exist are just not up to the mark. And as a result of that, markets are distorted. People are paying what they're not paying for, necessarily. And so in some cases, people get good deals. Money changes hands, other people make money on the way through. At the end of the day, though, there are winners and there are losers, and the losers are really the prospective purchasers, it seems to me.
Yeah, look, if you're going to do this, look, I'm not saying forming buying groups is a bad thing. It's a great thing. Buying wholesale is fantastic. I've done that in the past with many groups and bought off developers. They were in a lot of strife, but we bought with genuine discounts, and people have had deposits to front up after the discount. So this is what I said to the individual that invited me to this. To this presentation, and I said, look, when you add it all up, if I really wanted to buy in the complex, or if you're going to buy in the complex, wouldn't it be more prudent to go to the salesperson that the developers appointed there to sell the unit and just be straight up? Look, here's $700,000. I like the complex. I want to live here. I can see value at 700. I don't care if the strata levies go up. It's got everything I want. I want lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. I'm not, I want to have that luxury of just going down the lift and going into a shopping center and buying whatever I need to buy and working. I just work around the corner, blah, 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 whatever, whatever, whatever. Isn't better that way? And rather than go through this whole convolution of rebated contracts and this and that. And look, everybody's you're everybody's on the hook, and you can't really say you can't plead ignorance at the end of the day, right? You just can't. Ignorance is no defense with this. One way or another, you're gonna know that you're really testing the law here. So, and you really can't plead ignorance. But as you say, Martin, the winners are the mortgage brokers that held the conference, and the salespeople that got appointed by the developer to sell, because I'm sure they're getting at least $35,000 per sale. But the interesting thing is that to have a salesperson sell the complex a point of salesperson, whether it be a relative or whether it be somebody off the street or whether it be whatever, they don't need to have licenses. You don't have to have a real estate license in order to sell your own project or have a selling arm under your development company to sell your own project. And the mortgage brokers don't have to have a license to market a property. That's the interesting thing. Nor do accountants that also participate in these schemes or financial planners. That is the scary part, Martin. And this is why Fair Trade in New South Wales don't get involved. It's really more of a banking regulator that should get involved and other regulatory bodies. But it's not the only group that I learned that is actively participating. There's another group in around the Mascot region, another one in the Castle Hill region, and another one somewhere in the North Shore. So there are a lot of developers that are holding on to stock that they can't sell, and they're prepared to do whatever it takes to get out of that encumbrance that's weighing them down, and they're unable to start the next project because they don't have the funds. But hey, the New South Wales government's come to the rescue, and they will underwrite the next project. So if you want a cheap apartment, get a hold of this syndicate group before prices go back up again.
Very, very good. Well, continuing the, can you believe this? Here's another one. This is actually an article from David Taylor on the ABC website, and it specifically relates to the problem of affordability, particularly in communities where low to middle income households are being priced out. If there's no bank of mum and dad, then families in unaffordable areas face an anxious future. And we're seeing more and more of this, certainly in my surveys, where in fact what we have is we have people who can only get into the market with family wealth, and those without family wealth have no chance and therefore can't buy into that area at all. This is a very important, and it's a leading trend. Now, interestingly, the RBA recently said they weren't too concerned about the bank of mum and dad. In fact, they didn't do much, haven't done much work on it. But for my mind, this bank of mum and dad and the influence it's having on property markets is really, really significant, because, again, it's another reason why prices are accelerating, because money is passing intergenerationally. If you're in that group, then fine. But for many people who aren't, there's no real way out.
No, and this is why another side to that argument also is the fact that this is why we've still got very low listings on market in many parts of the Sydney region, and we'll continue to have that because there's nothing being built to replace it. If you want the empty nesters that have now become full nesters again, if you want the retirees that would sell up and go into a villa, a small villa, a local villa, or a complex purpose built for under the SEP 55 and upwards that accommodates more the before you go into a retirement home, that sort of elder lifestyle. Well, guess what? There's nothing around. So you're going to have to make do a lot longer with having to navigate up and down staircases. You're going to be doing renovations to homes and introducing wet areas or bathrooms to the first level, because grandma grandpa can't go up the stairs anymore to go to the and they can no longer occupy the main bedroom upstairs with the ensuite. All these things are being done, and they have been attended to right now, and this is why there's less and less properties, less and less homes on the market in a lot of desirable areas. And this is the point of this article that makes it, talks about the desirable areas. Now, you and I, how long have you and I been speaking about the the general trends, which are Tom Pannis's, your Mark Boris's, your all these other pundits and so-called property reporters and property experts do not understand. And it's simple that families don't want to venture out further than the area that they grew up in, that they've spent the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years in. And you've got areas, you've got suburbs. So basically, the NIMBYs, they're not in my backyard, have now got they've created a cross for themselves. They're falling on their own sword, because nothing's been built, nothing has been developed in that mid-tier range, in mid-tier development, such as your four villa complex, your six villa complex, because they haven't been allowed to because of the NIMBYs. Guess what? Everyone ages, or as Joe Biden would say, everybody ages.
Yeah. Well, the Bank of Mum and Dad phenomenon is one of those that is really quite concerning, because, as I say, it creates a two-tier society. And if there are people with intergenerational wealth that they can transfer down, people can buy in, that puts pressure on the prices. Others have no hope. And it's interesting that the underwriting standards are also getting tighter again for a lot of particularly first-time buyers. I was talking to somebody the other day who's in the rental sector trying to actually get into the market, and they went back to their bank to try and work out how much they could actually borrow. And in fact, what's happened, because of the higher interest rates for longer, the borrowing conditions are now even tighter. But not everybody's in the same boat, because, of course, ANZ announced this. This is absolutely astonishing. So basically, ANZ says, if you are a high net worth individual and deemed to be at low risk, we will actually slash your lender's mortgage insurance. And this means that you've got to be able to invest a minimum of $2 million, but can secure loans ranging between $5 to $8 million while avoiding lender's mortgage insurance. Now, it's worth saying, Edwin, that you and I have discussed our lender's mortgage insurance before. LMI protects the bank, not individuals. But what this basically suggests is that ANZ is cherry-picking. This is, in fact, what the financial comparison website from Miss Tyndall said. they're cherry-picking. But again, it's a further distortion in the market, isn't it?
Yeah, look, Martin. We got to stop complaining, right? Look at the bright side. You got to look at the bright side, right? So, who was it that said? Was it Jerry Harvey or somebody said that it's harder to borrow $1 million than it is to borrow $100 million, right? Someone along those lines, right? So I've got the solution, Martin. I've got the solution. I put up on my X feed. And it's really simple. You just got to do what the WeChat chatterers are doing, right? This is what you go to these rich affluent areas, and I can guarantee you that you could rent out a room in a house somewhere in there, right? Now, the privileges of renting out a room for many, as we've spoken about in previous years, the reason why the WeChat chatterers rent rooms in areas where they're not living, and also rent apartments in areas that are not living, it's for really no other reason than they're not going to be living there. Worst case, they're just going to use it as storage. Is because they want the address. They want the postcode to appear on the documentation, so that they can send, in the majorities, they can send their children to the local school in that local catchment area, right? So you take that principle, Martin. Come on, here's a thought, right? You take that principle and you apply that principle, and this is where our followers, they know where we're going, they know where I'm going with this, is you get yourself that address, that postcode. Now, you may have been trying to buy a $1 million house in Detroit, or you might have been trying to buy a $1 million house in Trailer Park. And but you got to look up. Eagles look up. We fly high. Don't be like a chicken looking down. Stop looking down. Look up. Look. Aim high. So now, because you've got the postcode, you've got the address, and you've got the postcode, now you can approach the bank and say, listen here, Pee-wee, I want I want a $2 million, or let's go crazy, let's go for 2.5. Now, I'm not going to buy a Mount Druitt because you've up, you're there. You've got the postcode on your side. You don't have to come up with a 20% loan to avoid your LMI. So you put that towards your $2.5 million borrowing. You're borrowing 95% of that. So then now you're moving into where Parapower wants to buy into. You're moving into the rocks. You're moving into very affluent area of the rocks, of Beecroft, Eastwood, Carlingford. Come on. There's your answer, Martin. So, why are people complaining? That's what we should be doing, right? Or not? Hey, you owe the bank. You owe the bank a million, or you owe the bank 2.5. They still got you by the short and curlies. So you might as well go all the way. Aim high is what I say, Martin. That's what you got to do, and that's how you do it. It's not financial advice or legal advice, by the
Yeah, well, but
way.
it does make the point, and it's interesting they talk about Northbridge, Manly, Bronte, Cremorne, and Killara are areas making the cut, and what that does is to effectively spread the love when it comes to multi-occupational room letting, doesn't it? I mean, it's happening everywhere. I was talking to somebody the other day actually who used to be an old neighbour of mine when I used to live in Cremorne years and years ago, right? And he was telling me that more and more of the big houses in that area have now been effectively turned into these multi-unit places where you've got lots and lots and lots of people living in individual rooms, right? And so, they're seeing it on the ground. The whole character and the nature of parts of Sydney and elsewhere, I'd say, in the country, are changing because of this. But I was interesting. It's interesting that. With regard to ANZ, the CEO of CBA basically said that ANZ was, pushing the market quite hard. And this is another example of ANZ pushing the market quite hard. Interestingly, the margins on the mortgages on the banks are down a little. So we'll expect more help from APRA to support the banking sector further as well, right? But this is just another really really crazy example of further market distortions. Wherever you look, there are market distortions. But as you say, there are strategies that you can employ.
Yeah, you just gotta find which one suits you, and you just ride it. Look, it's scary, Martin. This is why you and I keep on saying, been saying for a very, very long time. The Aussie battlers, the first time buyers, just got thrown under the bus, and they continue to be run over by the by the useless trams that we've been building in Sydney. It's scary times. It's scary times ahead. And look, unfortunately, folks, things aren't going to get any easier before they get better. Things have really got to break before they get better. We're at a point in time right now that the tiring the population, the tiring us out, they're making us really weary to the they're trying to weary us down to the point that we don't go out, or we don't making any more noise. They're just going to tire us out one way or another, and that's the aim. We just got to stay resilient. And look, if and my sense of when I say you got to stay resilient, if you want to get into the market, you just got to bite the bullet and go a little bit further afield than what you would otherwise normally would go. Get in the market and get settled, and then later on look at moving back into your desired area by one way or another. But it's just becoming harder to even, as you said, to pull together that deposit. Your money in the bank is losing value unless you change your deposit, like a very smart banking follower of ours said to me a couple of weeks ago. Well, you could have money in the bank, or you could transfer your deposit into gold. Food for thought, right? So, but this is where we are. And but unless numbers go into the mid-20s based on the demand that we're still seeing on the ground, things are still going to be very, very tough in the Sydney property region.
Well, let's look at the numbers, Edwin, because the story now is this is for the Sydney region. On the 10th of June, we had 16,480 properties. If we jump forward a week to the 17th, 16,262. So a small fall in the Sydney region, although it's interesting that your trend chart still shows that relative to where we were previously, the 24 numbers are still significantly higher than the 23 numbers, but still those listings are significantly lower than what would need to be there to be able to drive prices down. So tight market continuing.
That's right. And as I said, we really got to hit the early 20s before we can start putting a real dent in the appetite. And with all these new schemes or regurgitated schemes that are coming up to make it easier for investors to come into the market and also in our occupiers, I dare say that these low numbers are just not helping those that genuinely just want a home, just want a residence, an address that they can build a home and build a have that longevity of tenure under safe space and under a roof.
Yeah, and just as a point of comparison, in 2022, I think there was more than 18,000 listings same time of year. Right. So you can see just how much below the long-term trends we are currently. And in fact, even in Melbourne, things are not that flash. There's still higher listings relative to Sydney, but it's interesting to note that on the 10th of June, we had 26,985. The following week, it was 26,741. So it's come off its peak. But interestingly, Edwin, the trends in Melbourne and Sydney are still departing. And again, I was doing some analysis quite recently, looking at the sales price and the trends in Melbourne. Prices are still pretty weak. There's still quite a lot of ex-investment properties being listed, and the property transactions are a bit all over the place. Many, many houses still there, though.
Yeah, and things aren't going. And this is where we're going to get a lot more houses being dumped on the market in the outer fringes of that Melbourne region. Nothing else but because the politicians from local governments to the state governments are wanting to drive investors out, and they think that by driving property investors out, it's going to give more of an opportunity for the first time buyers to come in and buy, because property prices are going to drop. But hey, this is my message to these low level politicians is your Albo and Co Real Estate Group are going to usher in a lot more people from China and other parts of the world in order to absorb, because they can't afford the property market, whether it be Melbourne, whether it be Adelaide, whether it be whatever capital city, Northern Territory, wherever it may be. They can't allow it to pull back how people have been reporting the Melbourne market coming back in terms of price. That distortion is too big in their views. And at the end of the day, people that have got property still vote, and people that don't have property and the renters vote as well. So they got to try. They're trying to balance those ledgers in order to get, and then you've got the rich independents like the Teals and everybody else that can't afford these areas to fall, because they've got vested interest in a lot of these areas themselves. So it's an interesting thing, unfortunately, and also. It's get out of Melbourne as well, Martin. We're back to get out of Victoria, get out of Melbourne, because now you've got council voted investors pay double the rates, and also unions are on a high because of the pay rises that they've just received. So construction, major construction and developments, are going to be a lot costlier to build it, but sooner than later the politicians are going to wake up to this. They've got to wake up to this, and they can't afford to have all the investors come back to New South Wales. What their long play is, I don't think they themselves don't know what their long play is. I think it's an ad hoc. It's a month by month travel for these politicians at the moment. A journey. It's not, it's really let's try this or let's try that. Just trying to appease this group, and if this one screams and yells a little bit louder, we'll appease them for a little bit and calm this other one down. It's a game of hot potato.
Yeah, it's juggling, isn't it? Juggling, but doesn't necessarily solve any of the long-term issues that we've been talking about for quite a long time. Unfortunately, politicians are only interested in the next vote, the next election. They're not really interested in structural change. If they were, then there would be a bunch of levers they should be pulling and would be pulling, but they're not. Now, if we go to Brisbane, just briefly, the Brisbane story is still pretty anemic, really. On the 10th, we had 3,400 properties for sale in Brisbane. And the following week, 17th of June, we had 3,362. So slightly weaker there. And just while we're talking about Brisbane, I was quite fascinated because, of course, again, the local politicians like to play a few games, don't they? And so one of the games that's being played at the moment is that in Brisbane, there's now talk about introducing Airbnb permits for property owners amid housing crisis crackdown. The mayor of Brisbane is talking about the fact that property owners should now need appropriate planning approvals, body corporate support, and the 24/7 property manager for short-term rentals. Again, you've got to understand there's an agenda here that isn't necessarily aligned with, necessarily good outcomes. But the fact of the matter is we've got the Olympics coming, so you got to find a way through.
Yeah, look, it's going to be Caravan City. I really believe Brisbane's going to be Caravan City very soon. And yeah, there's just not enough there. And if that migration, although some have been saying that the migration from the state migration from for people getting out of Victoria or out of Melbourne has tapered out. It's could even be in the negative. But it's a wait. Let's wait and see. There, but with Brisbane, it's another interesting market. We don't have our feet on the ground there. I don't really understand other than what we've been sharing, as to the numbers. But it certainly does paint a picture that that the market there's still got in my view, in more newer areas, because there are a lot of older areas in the Brisbane market, that the homes have come up to requiring very high maintenance investment properties that the Japanese bought back in the day when everybody was saying that Japan was going to take over Australia, and they were going to start in Queensland back in the early 90s. These townhouses that were built then are pretty much coming up to the use by date, and with the minimum standard regulations that have got put in place November or so last year, they're going to start following suit with regulatory requirements around glazing, insulation, and various other points. So it's going to be costly to hold on to a lot of these older townhouse developments. They're up there in Queensland. Because of the high cost in bringing them up to par in order to meet the minimum standards, I think we've still got a year or maybe two before things start changing that manner here in Sydney. But it's going to be interesting. It's just a wait and see. Look, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, Martin, either. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that a lot of these changes have got to be put in place, because over the last three and a half decades, investors have been very relaxed or lax with regard to the upkeep of the investment properties, and they've been somewhat hesitant to put money back into the product. Let's not forget that it wasn't too long ago before it was a struggle for the rents weren't going up. It's really only post 2020 and the pandemic that really started, in the influx of the migration policy, the current migration policies, and the previous policies as well, that there's really increased the rental incomes for the investors. So really, it's only just a recent turning point, but still no excuse for a lot of these properties not to have been maintained over the last three and a half decades.
No, and just while we're talking about Brisbane, now it's interesting to see the Sunshine Coastal area was declared, under an Aboriginal scheme over the last 24 hours. So it'll be interesting to see whether that has any impact or not. I saw quite a lot of social media noise about it, but I'm not going to comment further on it. Just to say it's an interesting development. There are more schemes as well being spoken about. Let's just move on to the auctions. Interestingly, Victoria leads the way, of course, as we've been discussing previously. Auctions are a bit of a mechanism to try and spark activity. New South Wales down a little. We are going through the sort of the quieter period now. I guess now the real challenge, Edwin, is what will happen in the spring.
Yeah, look, many are starting to call. A lot more properties coming on market, but it's we've still got, well, we've still got 8 weeks before we start getting, hitting the beginning of spring. So it's really not. I don't think. I'm sort of. I'm of the opinion that the low listing markets for winter have just come a little bit later than what I expected, but they'll drop. But again, 1 week doesn't really make the trend. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens over the next 2 3 weeks. But again, Martin, numbers have really got to jump up dramatically in order for this demand. Just as much, if you have more listings on market than what we had last year in spring, it's I dare say that you're still going to have a lot more demand. Let's not forget that the new kids on the block haven't really picked up their stride yet with the new money that they've been been gifted in over in Vietnam with because of all the golden era that they've just walked into. That is one contingency, that one group that's still yet to make a real serious impact in the Sydney market. And I really think that the Silent Tigers are only just they've only just hit second gear, and we still got third, fourth, and fifth gear to go, and then you've got overdrive.
Absolutely. Well, talking of overdrive, looking at the rental situation, the Sydney rental market last week had 11,994 properties for rent. Jump forward a week, 12,413. So a bit of an increase. And in Melbourne, we had 10,253 on the 10th, and a jump to 10,506 the following week. So in both cases, a little bit of an uptick, but still, if you look at the overall vacancy rate, still very, very low, and still a lot of people, of course, being priced out. And it's interesting, I had again a conversation with somebody who's in Melbourne in the rental sector, and they're getting priced out. They're still considering going to Brisbane despite the fact that Brisbane is the probably the second most expensive area. There are still properties further out that are cheaper. And so they've actually basically given up on Melbourne and are looking at another state. So the interstate migration, I think, will be another thing to watch ahead. But as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, we always got time for your last little thought, your tip of the week, and this is a biggie.
Oh, look, it sort of dovetails off the buying group that this this buying group of property, and after that, Dusty and myself, we decided to go to over to get some nice cheap food over in Eastwood. We just started chatting about bulk buying and about the benefits, not only with property, but then obviously with me, I did, just sort of started thinking about the opportunities of putting together groups to back in the day when my parents, when we first came to Australia around 1974, 1974, 75, my uncles came over as well, and around that time, I re remember my uncles, my immediate family that go to the markets and buy fruit in bulk, and they would buy vegetables and meat in bulk, and they would share it. They would participate and get it, obviously get it a lot cheaper than your retail, than your milk bars around Gladesville, or your butchers up the top of Pittwater Road and Victoria Road. So it was one of these ideas. And interestingly enough, a couple of weeks ago, I put a buying group together to buy a mill in the in the land of New South Wales, closed down. It was one of my friends' sister-in-law that owned. They just closed the mill down, and they had a lot of timber. And we put a small syndicate together to bring a couple of truckloads into Sydney. And we actually, when you looked at it, you looked at the price, and you compare the prices with your Bunnings and your timber yards here in Sydney. We actually got it at 30 cents in the dollar than what we would otherwise pay, even wholesale prices or discounted prices from Bunnings, plus transport, and then transport split amongst the four of us. It was, let's say, we ended up paying something like 45 cents in the dollar. But one, it's good timber. Two, it's saved a penny. But we got a storage as well. That's another thing. So it's, and then closer, some things that people can do to save a bit of money, with the groceries. And I'm not talking about going to Costco's or any of those. Most of it's junk food that you buy there in bulk. I'm talking about, putting buying groups together to go to the markets, or farmers markets, or the markets in, Flemington markets, or the like, in Sydney, and get it cheaper and split it amongst the families. Yeah, it does take a little bit of time, but I think it's worthwhile. Notwithstanding the fact that, you walk some of the fruit shops, the fruit's so old and being picked at by every man and his dog that's gone past the shop and manhandled, and the peaches and pears are being manhandled by just about everybody that walks past the shop, and it looks dry, looks old, looks hacked, and it's still very pricey. So yeah, look, that's my tip of the week. Create these little buying groups amongst your community, your family, and that little bit of saving can be placed elsewhere, that you don't need to go without, which is your medical, your dental, and those essential services and needs.
Yeah, good one, Edwin. And as with always, buying sensibly and buying in bulk, if it's good quality, can save quite a bit. So it's worth thinking about. Edwin, we've come to the end of another show. As always, we've touched so many different issues, but the stupidity continues. And I guess there'll be more to talk about next week, because post the budget, of course, there'll be yet more initiatives announced. And the announceables keep on flying around. And meantime, well, property market becomes more and more confusing because, of course, it's wrecked by politics, isn't
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, like you said, it's a gift that the government and the policies, it's just a gift that keeps on giving, right? So, and we'll certainly have a lot to talk about next week.
it? Look forward to that, Edwin. See you later. Take care. Bye-bye.
All the best.